This podcast is proudly brought to you by Solar Lab, designing and delivering premium solar installations for residential and commercial customers across Australia. Red Mill Bakery, Adelaide's finest bakery in Ethelton and Hectorville. Move Yourself Trailer Hire, quality trailers, trucks, utes, mowers and more for hire across Australia. Enphase, the world's leading and safest solar inverter manufacturer. Aussie Carts, Adelaide's only electric hire cart facility. Matt Hall DR Kart South Australia, TD Racing, Patrizzi Course, and Radio Italia Uno 87.6 FM, the station powering Negative Canberra, the motorsport show.
By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver. I race designed to win.
It's time for Negative Canberra.
Down the inside, Hamilton sees it coming. It's a late lunch by Verstappen, who takes the lead of the race.
If it's motorsport you want, then this is the place to be. All of the latest results, analysis, and interviews.
And a great start for car number 11. Delberto's got away beautifully at the start of the great race.
Right now on Radio Italia Uno 87.6. And now it's time to introduce your hosts, Jamie Lemure and Lee Harrison.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Season 2 of Negative Canberra, the motorsport show, proudly supporting Scuderia Ferrari Club Adelaide. I'm your host, Jamie Lemure, and, well, we decided this year for Season 2 to take it up a notch, and we sent our man Leonardo Harrisoni to Miami. And he's with us now, so apologies for the minor delays and some of the sound quality. But Lee, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, really good, mate. Look, and loving my time up here in Miami and settled in nicely, been here for a week now. So, yeah, it's quite an exciting time.
Now, there's a bit of urban myth. It's fringe time here in Adelaide, and there's urban myth going around Adelaide that Leonardo Harrisoni normally is, you know, sort of talking to all the lovely ladies, talking about how he was, you know, racing in Formula 3 for the Adelaide 500, which sadly isn't around at the moment. But instead, you're burning up the racetracks in Miami. Is that true?
I hear you've been talking to my good friend Biscuits then with these stories that are coming out. But yeah, look, pardon me. You know, it's been a little while since we've had some adventures like that, you know. Married with the wife and kids now, so those adventures have definitely stopped. But used to run around with some stories and attend the odd flashes on a Wednesday night on race week in my race suit and boots and all sorts of stuff. So we definitely got up to some fun. But now living life in Miami, the track here is brilliant. It's better than what I expected it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a car park track with nice and flat, but they've done super well here with some good elevation changes and fancy corners and off camber and positive camber and all that sorts of stuff as well. So really looking forward to getting the track build done here and getting the racing underway.
Yeah, it's it feels weird. I'm having to talk to you through a little screen, but normally we're sort of, you know, right alongside each other and, you know, pulling our hair and all that sort of stuff. But no, mate,
the urban myth is that I actually got sick of sitting next to you, so I had to jet halfway around the world, so I didn't have to do that.
So you've been talking to Bianca and Shay then, clearly. So it's No, man, it's I can't believe the off season for us didn't really kind of feel like an off season. It was all rather quick and sort of over and done with. But this whole Miami opportunity has really kind of been at least 6 to 8 months in the making, and it kind of died off there for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, bang, away you go.
Yeah, look, it sort of was happening in the background a little bit. And the main position that I was going to fill sort of went away there for a little bit, which the person who's doing that job, he's a good guy, Ryan. He's doing a great job. And then the urgency sort of really picked up start of this year. A lot of the team there from the Miami Dolphins NFL team and not sort of familiar with Formula One. A lot of the team that do have any motorsport knowledge are sort of from NASCAR as well. So just sort of helping guide along that way. But there's plenty of experienced people around. And like I said, they're so far along in the build. I'm quietly confident that it's all happening on time. Touch wood, of course, you know, it's motorsport. The worst will always happen, but yeah, it's pretty good. And been here, like I said, for a week now, just trying to wrap my head around the whole scope of everything. It's crazy what they're doing over here. For instance, the support paddock is on one side of the stadium and the pit entry is on another side of the stadium. So the plan at the moment is to set up a fan zone inside of the stadium with some sheeting down, and the support cars are going to drive through the stadium on their way to the pit entry. Yep. To be released for their session. So just the scope of that and having a fan zone set in there as well and having to close that off so cars can get in and out. And yeah, I mean, listening to 34 Porsche Challenge cars going through a stadium and they're echoing under the tunnels and all that sort of stuff, it's just the scope here is huge. It's crazy.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. Well, what we'll do is we'll touch on how you got there and your journey to that in the next segment. I guess what we'll do is we'll talk about some Scuderia Ferrari Club stuff very quickly. We'll get all that underway. So. New season for Scuderia Ferrari Club. It's actually the 6th birthday of the club this week. So, who'd have thought we'd hit 6 years, let alone 5 years? But, we're here, we're back, and we're doing our thing. We've got some new sponsors on board for the club this year, so I just wanted to give them a quick shout-out. We'll start with Move Yourself Trailers and the Cowie family, so special thanks to them for coming on board. Red Mill Bakery, so the Scousies, who are a part of the SRT, or the Scuderia Adelaide team, they've jumped on board as well. And they've got the naming rights for the Hire Kart Championship, so it's going to be the Red Mill Bakery Hire Kart Series, which is awesome. We've got Enphase Microinverters that have come on as a minor sponsor, and then also Solar Lab, who are a solar wholesaler that Justin Bralich and his team down there are good friends of mine and guys that I've known in the industry for a little while, and they've decided to throw some weight behind the club too, which is really cool. We've got TD Racing. Craig Denton also being a committee member as well, Matt Hall, DR Kart South Australia, and Patrizzi Corse, who have come on board again as well for their support, hence the strip today. So Michael can't complain, he's not getting some airtime. But memberships are open for a new year, $85 for a membership for those that are wanting to join the club. The club is synonymous for, becoming a motorsport-based club. So for listeners that are new to the show, it's the... one of two of the official Ferrari Formula One team supporters clubs in Australia, but also linked to the Formula One team around the world. And this club's always been designed about giving people access to motorsport that they normally don't do, both on a social sense, but also from a motorsport sense as well. So we do things like we have obviously a hire kart series, which Lee knows a lot about, and that's effectively running a championship, a combination of endurance races as well as some sprint race formats across all the hire kart facilities around Adelaide. Then we've also got the actual racing team, so we take it up a notch, and it's a transition from those that are racing in hire karts to take to the next step, which is club karting. And we've got a team there that's got a combination of juniors through our junior development program as well as obviously four-strokers at the moment, but we can do two-stroke as well. But that branches out and members can sort of be a part of the hub, which is effectively what the team base is, with those big bright red marquees. But it also opens up for opportunities for them to, as drivers, to get coaching and development through the likes of yourself, through Craig, through Matt Hall in particular. And we've seen some outstanding results on that front, in particular with Ileana and also Oshan Colangelo, which we'll touch on a little bit later as well. So to become a part of that journey, we also have social nights and tipping championships and bits and pieces too, just to make it fun. But $85 for the membership, which is will get you a card as well as some postcards. We get a cap and a stubby holder thrown in there as well. There might be the possibility of a leather-bound notebook from Ferrari too, which might be coming a little bit later in the year. But, mate, you've been a part of the club for a little while now, and, what are your thoughts on it all? Be nice.
Yeah, I'm always nice. You know, I speak highly of the club at all opportunities that I get. But yeah, look, like I said, it's not just about being Ferrari fans. There's not many motorsport focused clubs in South Australia where you can just sort of go along and get involved and share your thoughts and opinions with like-minded individuals. So I love being a part of the club, love the chats that we all have going on the WhatsApp channels and everything like that, and keeping up with it still while I'm over here in Miami. I'm ashamed, you know, a bit of a shame that I'm going to miss out on the Hire Kart Championship, but for the first few rounds, but I can make up for it and come back strong in the later half of the season. But yeah, it's good as well. You know, like not many people get to go go-kart racing, or they want to do go-kart racing more, so it's a good stepping stone, like you said, to get into the Hire Kart Championship organized activity. The dates are there, and you just go along and race. And then of course we've provided the pathway now for moving up into professional, so to speak, but competitive go-karting, and we've got all the connections there to the clubs and the people involved. So you see now with Chris, hasn't gone out and bought himself a go-kart per se, but is, you know, using a loan go-kart from the Southern Go-Kart Club to get his foot in the door. So the opportunities are there, and it's just a great club to be a part of.
Yes, Chris is quite synonymous with that Formula K go-kart now, and I think it's probably because of the Teal bodywork. It pulls his heartstrings with his Port Power love connections, I think. So, it's been awesome to see the journey of how that team and the club karting side of it has also evolved. And where it's going moving forward. So I get great encouragement when I get, when I see, you know, the likes of Ileana and that sort of thing, becoming really competitive, even on a national scale, at the AKC in particular over the weekend, or, you know, Oceane, who's been a talent anyway, but to know that we've played a small part in her journey and she's knocking on the door of the top 10 in her first race in KA4 at a national level as well, it's all really, really encouraging. So, onwards and upwards, I think, on that front. But, we've got our first event coming up, I think, at the end of March. So, Sunday on the 29th of March, we have our first endurance race, which will be the Red Mill Hire Kart Series. It's a 1 hour and 20-minute enduro at Jepp's Cross Kart Mania. So, Sunday the 29th of March at 6 p.m. for a 6:30 start. It'll be $150 per driver, which is actually a good fun event. That's what opened up our series last year, and you don't have to be a member of the club to participate. So if you want to jump onto the website, it's www.sfcadelaide.com. Go onto the online store and you'll be able to see the option in the shop to select and participate. You don't need to be an experienced karter to race the event, but you know, as long as you've got a co-driver is prepared to participate with you and have a little bit of fun, by all means get out there, and I encourage you all to give it a crack.
It's great. Why did you set it for the first event of the year when I'm going to be so far away? You just don't want me to team up with Mum and smoke everybody again.
Well, yeah. I think what we wanted to do was just rub salt in the wounds, to be honest with you, considering you, you know, you betrayed me and left me here to fend for myself, you know.
You'll be right. You can suck it up.
Well, yes, true. I think I've actually devised a new season for myself this year. I've called it El Plan. So it's largely going to be based on the club karting side of it. So I've gone out and bought myself a new steed, which I'm starting to understand and develop, with some big lofty goals at the end. So I might not even be participating in majority of the Hire Kart Series this year too. I'll just have to wait and see. But I can only spread my love as president so far.
Oh, this is true. And you've got to focus on the bits that are bringing you the most joy. And that's your new Bessie, the DR kart that you got from Matt Hall there, that's brought you along a little while. And hopefully you can do some more practice while I'm away, and you can give me a run for my money if we take part together in Wyala FSC round two.
Yeah, no, the DRs, Matt arranged the DR for me over the off season, which is really cool. New colour scheme as well. So we organised a new look, fresh start, fresh new look, and we took inspiration from the burgundy red from the 1000 Grand Prix race that Ferrari ran a couple of years ago at Mugello, which, encouragingly, has actually been quite warmly received in the paddock, which is nice. So that was I thought I'd do something different, being it's my first colour scheme as president of the club. And El Plan has been designed to, it's code for some lofty goals for later in the season. But it's distinctly different go-kart to drive compared to my brother's Tony kart. And of course, the SQ, which, you know, will go down in folklore as the thing that started it all. But no, it's just understanding what makes it work, what makes it tick at the moment, how to get speed out of it, but also learning and adapting it with how to drive it. So it's, you know, I've rarely seen a slow DR. So we'll just we'll see how it goes.
Well, bring on the rest of the year and good luck with the plan, and fingers crossed it all comes together as we talk about later in the year.
Yes, L plan. I think I'm hoping to get L plan to become like a cult like status, like Alpine managed to do it over the course of the year. So we'll expand upon L plan as the season unfolds. But speaking of unfolds, we're going to go off to our first commercial break, and when we come back, we will talk more about your journey to Miami.
You're listening to Negative Camber with Jamie and Lee on Radio Italia Uno 87.6 FM.
Welcome back to Negative Camber, the motorsport show, live in the studios of Radio Italia Uno. I'm with my co-host, Mr. Lee Harrison, live from Miami. And I really love the new intro. So I want to give special thanks and shout out to Ron from Podcast City as well. So we thought we'd do something a little bit different this year and go a bit cinematic, given all the kerfuffle and the climax that resulted in the Formula One season last year. So, mate, the journey to Miami. So I think we've got to backtrack a little bit from when you were working overseas and how you got into that whole stratosphere. So I'll open the storytelling to you.
Yeah, I mean, how far do you want to go back? Like, it's
We can bypass the fact that you were born and then you walked and you had nappies and all that sort of stuff. So let's fast track it to where, you know, where it all started.
So first job out of school was at the go-kart center, basically at Paracas. So it all started there. And then, you can attest for yourself, just grafted and worked hard. Ended up sort of being the manager there at Paraca for a little while, and then it was taken over by the crew at Fast Karts at Richmond, and I was sort of between the two of them, weekends at Fast Karts at Richmond, and the rest of the week at Paraca there as well. Sort of then things went a little bit downhill there, and I left there, went and got a job at Worth doing a sales rep, but that was not up my alley at all. So in the meantime, while I was working at Worth, the Bend was being built. I put an application in there, and I think their grand plan was always to sort of bring me on to take over the hire cart running part of the place, given my background, but was there running or sort of helping out with the running of the circuit, day-to-day activities, repairs on the track and all that sort of stuff. And just, again, was just there every day grafting, where I met Steve. Steve was from New Zealand, and he was synonymous with some America's Cup events and helping to set up the Hamilton 400 street circuit in Hamilton there in New Zealand, and taking supercars over there. He saw the work that I put in, and we stayed in touch. When he left the Bend, and when he left, he said that if he ever finds a job for me to go and be overseas, he'll invite me along. At that point, he was likening me to Michael Massey. He said, the only person that I've seen work as hard as you and want it as hard as you is Massey himself.
I hope it doesn't turn out to be like a dead end for him. Jeez.
Well, I mean, he's still involved, so I'll be happy.
Anyway, continue.
So yeah, then lo and behold, yeah, I sort of just kept working at the Bend. We did the hire cart center from there. Was there for however long it was, like another 8 or 9 months or something like that. And then Steve finally put something in front of me that I could either say yes or no to, and that was the offer to go over to Kuwait to be the circuit manager. A few nights of hard conversations and sleeping on the couch or the lounge room floor with Shay. It was pretty hard after being married for only about a month, getting that news that I was going to move to Kuwait. So worked that out. Went to Kuwait for, I think it was nearly 10 months. That's being the circuit manager there. And that was, you know, a task in itself, learning a new culture and having to live in the Arabic way and trying to understand that. And that was just an unreal experience. And through my time there, I went and worked at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, where I met another couple of guys that were working for the Emirates Motorsport organization. Did all what I got to do for them. And then, 2 years later now, one of the guys that I met is the director of sporting for the Miami Formula One. And seems I'm high on his to call list, and everybody else in front of me said no. So he gave me a ring and I said, sure, I'll come over. So I'm here until May, in which time I'll then come home at this stage.
This I stage.
Think, possibly.
So when you were at the Bend, you would have gone through Motorsport Australia licensing and accreditation and all that sort of stuff too. How did that all?
Yeah.
What was the process behind all that?
Well, in what term, to get my officials licensing?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. So
or
what? Did,
like
so
that? Yeah.
And I guess my line of questioning is more like, if there's others out there that, and I've considered it too, that want to go down the path of where you're going, what steps do they have to go through with Motorsport Australia, or what process did you have to go to then get all your licensing and your accreditations and all that sort of stuff as well?
I'm not really in the officiating side of things at the minute, but I did, and I sat my test online for my event command, general officiating courses, which you can all do on Motorsport Australia website, become an official, I think it's called, as a tab on their website. Yep. And you can sit the basic tests and then you just start going to races. So you work your way through being flaggy. And, I was put into the race control area by default because I was working and I was in there on behalf of the circuit crew. So that sort of got my foot in the door of race control, whereas otherwise you would go through being a flaggy and just trying to, heighten your profile and expand into other roles through that way. But it can definitely be done. And it's the same as Massey has done the same thing. And you just got to, if you're interested in motorsport, I would recommend it, even to go as a flaggy, because you get the best seats in the house. You might not get paid to be there, but you get the best seats in the house, get to wave a few flags, talk on the radio. It's a great experience. And unfortunately there's, as it's a volunteer thing, there's not many people coming through. And often we find when we're organizing the event that that we're struggling to find marshals and stuff like that. So definitely recommend doing it. And you never know where it's going to take you at the end of the day. But for me, it was more about the event organization and event running of things, which I sort of had refined my skills from being at the hire carts and having to deal with clubs like yourself and all the other car clubs around, sorting out events for them and making sure the track was safe and up to standard and to code. So that's sort of understanding those legislations is where my specialty came in, which is where I'm at now, sort of in Miami and while I was in Kuwait, was to make sure the track was always compliant and this one will be compliant.
Yeah, cool. Tell us more about your role specifically then in Miami now. So what's the day-to-day for you and what's going to happen over the course of the Formula One weekend?
Over the Formula One weekend, it's still yet to be defined. I'm here as sort of an advisor to the circuit manager. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, while they're getting into the deep dive of everything and could get lost in the weeds and the ruts and, what color are the leaves going to be on that day or whatever, I can sort of step back and just see the overall picture a little bit more clearly without getting too confused or lost down the rabbit holes. So I sort of just am here as an advisor day to day. At the moment, I'm setting up an agenda for an FIA visit. We've got the FIA here next weekend to have a look at the track and the infrastructure, drawing plans for how race control should be laid out. And then in the sort of the next couple of weeks, things will sort of get really hectic. The barriers will start going in Monday, and then I'll be flat out hanging signs and making sure the signs are in the right spots and, making sure that everything's, all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, basically.
Yeah, cool. So you'll actually, with the FIA side of it, you'll actually get to meet the new race directors and stuff like that too, or are they just sending representatives from race control?
No, one of the race directors will be here before the race, definitely. Yep. Whether they come this time or not, we're not 100% sure on. It could even still be Michael Massey coming this time, which will be cool because it'll be good to see him again.
Get the phone out, mate.
Yeah. We're all good.
Yeah. Nah, get the phone out. Get him recording. Have a chat to him.
Yeah.
You know the drill.
I'll try and get him on board. Try and get him on board for an interview. But so I should meet whichever race director is going to come to us. I don't think that's been decided yet. I think they'll decide sort of in the next couple of weeks or so before Bahrain who's going to attend what race after the sort of the dust has settled from the first preseason test that happened this week.
Yep. And so with your what's the hope in terms of what you're thinking that you might be able to do over the course of the F1 weekend? Have they given you any sort of indication of what your role is going to be for that sort of 4-day period, and then what will happen post F1 race?
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure I'll be a bit of a go-between. So I'll be maybe in and around race control, helping the circuit manager understand who's who in the zoo, and probably as well running around, tidying up any of the loose ends that anyone sees, or helping direct people to places where they need to go. It's a bit of a rabbit hole, this place. So we're actually, for anyone that doesn't know, the track is being built around the Miami Dolphins NFL Stadium, or Hard Rock Stadium, as it's called. And the amount of rooms and suites and where all the drivers are staying and the team managers have got to go, it's going to be choreography in motion. Like it's crazy, all the little rabbit holes. So I'll be a bit of a runabout, I think, most of the weekend. In terms of after the Grand Prix, I don't think I can say too much at the moment, but there's definitely talks happening behind the scenes that'll become more serious probably in the 3 or 4 days that I'm still here post Grand Prix.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm hoping that I can either at a minimum, I would love to come back and help out again next year. That'd be great. Spend it, you know, even if it's not for 3 months, if it's a couple of months, just to help hang signs and be an extra pair of hands on the ground would be ideal. But look, at the end of the day, I've got a job and a business to run back home as well. So, yeah, I need to come home at some point, but yeah, we'll see what happens. Watch this space.
Yeah, I can see somehow, I'm looking into my little crystal ball here, and I can see some Earl Harrison, you know, moving up the ranks of the FIA, maybe looking at a much larger gig for the next Australian Grand Prix next year.
There's a guy here that's heavily involved with the Australian Grand Prix as well, so there could be some stuff available, but the timeframes, you know, with the Australian Grand Prix being where it is, sort of doesn't lend itself kindly to me doing both, Australia or this one.
Yep.
I'd have to pick, basically. End goal would be to be in the FIA full time, even if that takes a few years, you know, let the kids get a bit older where they're a bit more independent. And then there's the possibility that maybe Shay can come on an adventure with me. And I don't know, we'll see what happens. But like I said, there's plenty of room to grow within motorsport organizations, so we'll see what happens. But like I said, there's promising talks coming out of Miami, which is good.
Yep.
They've got some other things planned that they may need my help with, so yeah, like I said, I might come home for a bit and then end up flying back once the dust has settled down on the pack up from the inaugural Grand Prix. We'll see where that takes us.
What's the vibe like in the city? I mean, are they getting the locals getting excited about Formula One being in Miami itself, or is it the opposite?
What city? I couldn't tell you, man, to be honest. The vibe within the building and the Dolphins staff that I do come across is just they're surprised at the sheer scale of what's actually happening around them. And these are the people that have, you know, they've held multiple Super Bowls within their stadium. And they're surprised at how big the scope is on this Grand Prix build. So I'm planning on venturing into the city when I have a day off and just sort of wearing some sort of memorabilia from the event to sort of just see if anyone taps me on the shoulder to say, hey, you know, blah, 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 super excited. But I think it's all looking, you know, everyone's pretty keen from, you see the reactions on Facebook and stuff. So yeah, like I've been here for a week. My plane was delayed 36 hours coming into Miami. So I've had a bit of a torrid week and spent most of the afternoons coming home when it's dark and not really going out anywhere.
Yeah, fair enough. What caused the delay in the flight?
I'm not sure. I got to LA okay. And then when I was landed in LA, there was an initial 2-hour delay, and then that got pushed out to 4, and then 8, 10. And then I said to the staff, I've had enough of this waiting stuff. Can I have a hotel room, please? So I got put up in a hotel for the night, and then they said maintenance issues or something. But I eventually left 27 hours after I was supposed to have left initially. So, yeah, it was all good, though. Finally got here, and like I said, just put a little bit of extra time on the journey, but we've recovered now. Should be good, and next week start pushing on.
And you've managed to cut your luscious locks off, mate. It's you're actually starting to look sharp again.
Yeah, for everyone that's tuned in at home, I've gone short. You know, thought going to be in Miami corporate, may as well shave up for the big deal. But I can grow these long locks back. Don't you worry about that.
It didn't take you long to grow the last set, because I reckon 12 months ago I found a photo of when we did our very first podcast. Well, a bit over 12 months ago. And the hair was that length. And then before we knew it, you were looking like the Beatles after that. So it's, you know, late 60s Beatles.
Yeah, I'm struggling to find a hairdresser. Like, I've had a look on the way to and from work every day, somewhere I can pop in and keep this under control. But if I let this go for many weeks, it'll probably be back to that length before I get home, to be honest.
No worries.
But I'm under strict instructions not to have a ponytail, so I can't let that happen.
Yeah, exactly. Don't come back with that ponytail. Speaking of coming back, we're going to be off to another break, and then when we come back, we will start to talk karting.
To Negative Camber with Jamie and Lee on Radio Italia Uno 87.6 FM.
Welcome back to Negative Camber, the motorsport show, proudly supporting Scuderia Ferrari Club Adelaide. We now start our review of the motorsport segments, and we get straight into local karting. So, karting season, well, really kind of started, let's say, a couple of months ago now, but the first major event that popped up on the South Australian calendar was the Festival State Cup, held at the great little Barossa go-kart club track down on the outskirts of Nuriupta. And two-day event, the Festival State Cup, for those listening, is effectively the South Australian multi-race championship held across all the major go-kart clubs around South Australia. John Ellis and his team ran a beautiful event. Big Johnny himself had a good chat with him on the Sunday morning, I think it was, of the final, just sort of debriefing about how his weekend had gone so far and what the club was hoping to get out of it and how his race went too. But it was actually a really smooth run event. So kudos to Karting South Australia and Karting Australia for running a fantastic event in terms of facilities, in terms of availability and internet and all that, all the bits and pieces that you need to run an event quite smoothly. So you've done Barossa before, Lee, mate. What are your thoughts on the track?
They should have left it the way it was. But
I didn't pay him to say that, Johnny. So I'll let him expand upon that.
I mean, as everyone knows, I'm one that hates change anyway, but I just think the layout was better before. It was more fun, more enjoyable to drive around. Now it's just too fast, too flowy, and I'm just not a big fan of the change to the track shape and how it is anymore. Everyone's got their own opinion. There's probably guys out there that love the change and love what it is, but nothing beats the old Barossa with the turn one hairpin, turn two hairpin, and then off in out into the darkness and in and around the trees through PRD was, and then onto the kink before the sweeper was. It's a great little layout before, all good.
It was the first time I'd actually driven on the track personally for probably 4 years. So I think the first time I'd actually driven on it was the first ever kart sport event that they ran. So that was when I met Tim and got into racing four stroke full stop. So to get back out there was something that I wanted to do off the bucket list. And I actually really enjoy the exit of turn one, going in and around the tree leading up to the hard braking left-hander going into Gumtree. I reckon that's a great little piece of track. If your cart's handling really well and you've got a good set of tyres underneath you can just hold the accelerator on the four-stroke anyway and just go flat out up into the hard braking point going into that left-hander. So,
curb that's there on that right-handed bit now as you come out of turn, call it 1-2, you dip down into the left part of it and then it flicks right.
Yep.
The end of that curb on the left-handed, the second part of the left-hander, that's the existing curb that was there. Well, I mean, unless I've changed it in the last, I don't know, however many months it's been since I've been there, but the existing curb from where the track came along a straight to that point and then did a hairpin, and then you flipped right to go up to another corner again, and then you can see where the corner went before, where they've still got that little bit of bitumen where the initial curb for that long left-hander, like you said, is. But, yeah, like the track just doesn't have that major passing opportunities anymore. The front straight's too fast. The corner at the end of the straight's too fast for my liking anyway. And, yeah.
You know, it was that exit of turn one, that's like the road kind of, there's like a little gap where the road just kind of dips away and you hit the ripple strip really hard on the exit. But then if you go in too hard, because if you go, it's a really tricky kind of setup going into turn one, because if you go just that little bit further out wide, you're actually off the racing line into the marbles and then you spear off on the track. And I can't speak on behalf of all the other classes, but the amount of go-karts in the four-stroke medium heavy class that were going off into turn one, cutting across turn two and just blowing leaves and dust and track all over the place. I won't mention Anthony doing it for about four or five times in the first heat on Sunday, but it's tricky. And if you're not careful, a lot of drivers would cut off the curb and go straight across the track, and it resulted in a pretty serious accident coming into the final, which unfortunately ended the chances of Mark Panaris, who drove superbly all weekend, to be fair. And that would have been a certain second place at least that went begging for him. He ended up getting a DNF. So I saw Mark at the end of the race, and he seemed a little bit shaken up by it, and I hope the kart was okay, but he was all right. But it's very, very tricky. If you go offline just that little bit on any part of that track, you hit the ripple strip and you're gone like that, especially if it's in the wet or anything like that. So from a personal standpoint of view, I went to the meet just learning the go-kart really still, and we ran 100 lap old tires, whereas others were running brand new slicks. Anthony was who's the other driver in the team, still ran the same setup that we did for that we refined on his Tony kart for the enduro at Southern. So it was, and still ran the same tires from that event as well, so they'd probably done at least a good 150 laps. So for us, we were never going to be, you know, right at the front of the pack, and to be fair, we never really had the pace all weekend. I mean, if you add half a second to our lap time and stuff like that, we still probably had two or three tenths to find in ourselves. But
That's the last two or three tenths you can find if you're on the back of those guys and you're able to follow them a little bit. But
yeah,
starting the race and stuff on tires that are way past their use by data probably didn't help too much.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I'm not going to be doing a lot of the regional events personally myself this year. So like Whyalla and Mount Gambier, purely because of the kids and Bianco to be a support for them. So I used Festival State Cup as a chance just to get some racing in, and I love driving my DR too much that, I wanted to get as much time as I could in it and understand what sort of changes it does to it. So we came away positive. Our pace at the end, especially in the final, was, in some cases we were, top sort of half dozen karts in terms of lap speed, which was great. It's now just sort of starting to refine that and understand that the karts a lot better and what's going to get the most out of them in all track conditions. But we've got a pretty good solid foundation. We walked away. One, it was a great weekend. It was good to have a bit of a laugh. We pit with Daniel and Nicholas Romeo. So it was a family affair. So from a personal front, I really enjoyed the weekend. I had a great time. So, but anyway, it's not about me. It's all about the sport. And we will start to go through the results. So we'll go with four-stroke medium first. And Callum Belmonte was first, followed by Mark Sanford, and then Nicholas Romeo. So Nick, and notable mention should be Mark. I mean, that he should have been top three on that result there. Probably should have finished second, I would probably assume, given where he was all weekend. So four-stroke heavy was Jack Ryan first, with Daniel Bowden second, and then Grady Hutchinson third. And then we had Cadet 12, which was Dom McCurry, ended up getting first place, followed by Noah Enright. And third was Sienna Goddard. So we go to KA3 Senior Light, and we had Nicky Watson that came out first. We had Keo Fechner second, and we had Troy Moreland in third. KA4 Junior Light was a cracking battle all weekend between the Imbrogno brothers and Ocean Colangelo, who made her debut in KA4 Junior Light, and a victory in second place is only separated by 0.2 of a second in favour of Salvatore. So Salvatore Imbrogno first, Ocean Colangelo second, and Giuseppe Imbrogno third. We had four stroke senior light. Anthony Ormsby, who had a cracking battle with Wesley Bowden in the final. So Anthony Ormsby came out on top with let's say, some interesting tactics in the final race there. But, you know, whether that was sorted out in the pit lane or not between him and Wes, I'm not too sure. But and Nick Torquati had
There's a story there.
Okay, well, eyewitness report to this. Coming out of the last corner. So I watched the race where I sat or where I stood. From the spectator point of view, I had Gumtree to my left, and I had the final sort of double left-hand apex sweeper right in front of me as well. And Wes and Anthony were going hammer and tong for the whole race. Nose to tail, passing each other, clean overtakes. And now, I can't remember exactly, but I'm almost certain Wes was on the outside of Anthony going into underbraking under Gumtree. They've gone too wide. And then Anthony's come across on the exit of Gumtree, going out from the left, going into the right, and Wes has pretty much been spewed off into the grass and got some gravel, etc. as well. And Anthony came out of the right-hander in first and then crossed the line less than a second ahead of Wes after that. So when I say controversial, only because I saw it to my left, so it was hard to see you know, who was in the right, who was in the wrong there, and you probably sort of pass it as a bit of a racing incident, but I don't know. You know, Wes is online going under brakes and Anthony's on the inside, but then they've come out too wide and there probably could have been some more racing room left. But, obviously the stewards didn't see any problem with it because they kept the Anthony with the win. So, it was interesting when you're an eyewitness on the track and you get to see all that sort of stuff happen in front of you. So, clearly, this result stood, so officials didn't feel that there was a problem with it. But it was questionable, is all I can say.
That's good.
Yeah. Four-stroke super. Tim Murphy had a titanic battle with James Place. So Tim ended up getting on top by two or three hundredths of a second over James. They were nose to tail for the whole weekend. And Steve Skinner came in third. 4SS Junior. Blake Turner first. Lewis Harrison in second. Is it? Child that you never had there, mate, or number three was Jackson King, and then you had KA4 Junior Heavy. You had Charlize Brown and Harry Muller in second place. Tag 125 restricted medium. First was Scott Bullman, second Jack Ryan, and third Simon Major. We had a chat with Simon on Sunday morning. Actually, we bumped into each other in the pit lane, and He had an interesting Saturday. I think he's just either rebuilt or built a new go-kart, and he had some bits and pieces flying off it. So managed to get it all together. And he's a good guy, Simon. I love him. But, he managed to get third, so he was pretty happy with that. Cadet 9, Ileana Ostojic, Scuderia Adelaide's own, another podium for her. Ocean as well. Congratulations to both girls, really, for getting their podiums. And Nick as well, another Scuderia Adelaide member. So we had Ileana Ostojic first, Atherin Smith second, and Blake Gray in third position. We had Tag 125 Light. We had Christian Cowie first, Braden Parkinson second, and then Joshua Rust in third. KA3 Junior, Leo Ianella, Ben Holiday second, and Jacob Chandler third. And then Tag 125 Restricted Light, we had Shane Moreland first, Anthony Ormsby second, and then Ben Press in third place. So all in all, that was Festival State Cup round one. The next round is actually going to be just the day after you come back in Whyalla, which is another tight, twisty little track, but one that you're actually quite fond of.
Yeah, I do love a bit of Whyalla action. Even the track before was quite cool. And then they did an extension, but didn't take away the initial characteristics of the track, which is awesome. Look, let's see if I can make it. It's going to be tight. I think I land back home in Australia at, 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock or something on the Saturday morning. Possibly there's a potential that I shoot straight from the airport to Whyalla. Depends on what the plan is there with seeing the family and stuff again, but then could probably race Whyalla and then come home on the Monday and be all good. But go-kart's built, ready to go as far as I'm aware, and was ready for Barossa, but I flew out the day beforehand.
Yeah, aren't you just the rock star? You get the Caravasses to build you up the Sprint Master. Nick does all the testing for you. You just rock up with your leather bag, you know, with your sunglasses and your golden Miami tan, right? And then just rock up to Whyalla and just go there and probably plant it on pole too.
Look, I don't know. I'll be a bit rusty. I have to shake off some cobwebs. Hopefully get a couple of sessions on Saturday afternoon to do some laps.
We'll wait and see. But I'm going to keep close tabs on this. I think this is going to be fantastic just to see what Mr. Rockstar Harrisoni is going to do. Maybe we'll get Biscuits to do the testing for you instead.
No, he likes a different go-kart than me, so he can stay clear of my go-kart. I'll probably get it back and it'll be bent and crushed in half and full of sand and weeds and gravel, so he needs to keep his hands off of it, unfortunately.
Speaking of karting, we'll quickly cross over to the Australian Karting Championship, which was run this weekend at the Port Melbourne Karting Complex a la Todd Road. And that's the big show. That's the if it's the pinnacle of karting in Australia. It's the domestic championship where you've got a variety of classes like KZ2, KA2, X30, Tag 125, KA3 Senior, KA4 Junior, Cadet 12 and Cadet 9. So it's non-four-stroke based, pretty much anything two-stroke related and gearbox related is what's going to be part of that show.
It's the stepping stone. It's supposed to be there as the pinnacle of Australian karting. You said it's a domestic, but it's actually it's national. It's massive. It's got 320 something entries this weekend across the eight classes or however many there is. And if you do the maths, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out that most of those classes are oversubscribed. So they've had to do the creative accounting ABCD method, which you know I'm not a fan of.
Bring back the rep charge.
Hashtag bring back the repper charge, but such a good weekend. And the next round will be at Bolivar in Easter. So for everyone that's listening, if there's ever a time, I think we said this the last time as well, but if there's ever a time to come watch go-kart racing, Easter long weekend, if you haven't got any plans, head out to Bolivar Raceway because that's where it's going to be.
Yeah, massive show, massive event. It has very much a, might sound a little bit cheesy, but it's very much a Formula One type feel or a big show feel to it with all the massive teams and the marquees and that's where all the dollars are spent, without a shadow of a doubt. So it's a fantastic event. And, we'll probably do a full review of it because racing is still going as we speak. But we'll probably do a full review and overview of the show. I know that Ileana and Oceana and a few of the Scuderia Adelaide members like Joshua Denton and Craig, etc., are over there competing at the moment. And Ileana in particular is holding herself well. She's been in the top half dozen of Cadet 9 over the whole weekend. Oceana's been top 10, top 12. In KA4 as well, Christian Cowie and Josh Denton are working their way through the field in KZ2. But there's been some big shunts. I know there was a massive pile up in KA3 going into downhill, going into turn one at the start of the race that sent a couple of drivers in hospital and bits and pieces. So fingers crossed that they're all okay and safe.
Yeah, it's Todd Road for you. There's a nice heavy braking zone at the end of turn one or the start of turn one there. And these guys know that it's the Australian Championships and they can't be buried deep in the pack. So if you have one bad race, unfortunately, it's going to cost you the whole weekend. And if you're trying to charge your way back through, you make one mistake, it turns into a big pile up in turn one. But like you said, fingers crossed that those guys are all good. Lots of good South Australian drivers over there that are showing some good pace inside the top 10. Ben Holliday's another one in KA2. He's sitting sixth at the moment. And Christian Cowie's inside the top five in KZ. So lots of good news to come out of there.
Yeah, fantastic result. That's one thing about the TD Racing go-karts that come out to Todd Road and they generally put some pace on. So, Josh was running second last year and probably was in contention for the overall win before the motor packed it in. So, we shall see with bated breath, but it's definitely been a step up this year, I've noticed, in terms of coverage and how the teams are presenting themselves and stuff like that, which is fantastic. It just shows that they're really invested in the series itself, which is only going to lead them on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, while we're mentioning South Australians, I should probably mention Jacob Dowson as well. He's at the front of X30, which is probably one of the premier classes, more akin to like racing the premier class over in Europe, which is okay. But he's doing a great job and he always finds himself at the pointy end when it comes race time.
Yeah, he's come on in leaps and bounds in the last 12 months as well. So good on him. We will be off to a break and when we come back, we will start to talk Formula One.
You're listening to Negative Camber with Jamie and Lee on Radio Italia Uno 87.6 FM.
Welcome back to Negative Camber, the motorsport show, proudly supporting Scuderia Ferrari Club Adelaide from the studios of Radio Italia Uno. We now go on to Formula One. And it hasn't really felt like an off-season, even though there's been a bit of an off-season to it. There's been heaps of stuff happening. both globally. I guess that's contributed to some minor alterations in the F1 calendar, but we've also just started pre-season testing. We've seen the launch of new cars. It's all happening, but something that's very close to home to you, mate, the dismissal of Michael Massey as F1 race director. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's he's been made a scapegoat, really. They had to put it on him, unfortunately, and, you know, then they come out and say that there's all these other problems within the, you know, the scope of work that he was entrusted to do, and he had too much on, and he was getting too much, you know, didn't have enough help in race control, which led to the problem, they're calling it. But then they just get rid of him as well. So I just don't see why, after everything that he's done up until now, he couldn't have been part of the solution. If he had all of this stuff going on, and that was the contribution to his not mistake-making thought process in Abu Dhabi, then I don't, yeah, like I said, I don't know why he can't be part of the group of people that are taking on the FIA race directorship for Formula One this season as well. Just to push him to the side like that is a little bit unfair, but, you know, I stand firm in everything that I've said about him having made the right decision. He got, you know, he used the rules to the extent that they're there to be used, and it wasn't his use of the rules. It was the way the rules were written that was wrong. So, yeah, look, it's pretty sad. I really like everything that he did. He brought the most exciting and entertaining Formula One season that Formula One has had in any recent memory. You just look at all the figures, and the Formula One grand finale at Abu Dhabi had more more viewers than the Super Bowl from America. So they're doing something right, and to just let that all go is a little bit unfortunate.
Yeah, look, for me, I'm looking at this from two perspectives. I'm looking at it from what the FIA could have done better, I think. But then also, you look at it from how the race. There's two separate issues, I think, in my opinion, was the Michael Massey's day to day, and the FIA, and what is clearly now been identified as a lack of structure and support. The argument to that would be, well, up until Charlie Whiting passed away, had that structure changed? Had it been the same? What has now happened in the last 24 months that Michael Massey had been running that role that has now contributed to all of a sudden them acknowledging the fact that there's all this shortfall, given that this is the pinnacle and the highest level of motorsport globally? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I look at that and I think to myself, well, if that is the case and he was you know, understaffed or, you know, or overloaded with under-resourced or whatever, if they knew about that problem beforehand, what or why did they not put steps in place to change it? Because what, you know, had it only just become because of Abu Dhabi that all this stuff had come to light, or had it all been bubbling away under the surface and you needed a flashpoint for that to happen?
So it needed a flashpoint to happen because, unfortunately, even now still, the FIA haven't come to the full realization of how much Michael does in the background.
Yeah.
Even Charlie before him was doing the same stuff, and that was, you know, it's evident that that's what Michael's doing now because that's how he got taught. Charlie was his mentor, and that's what he got taught, that the way that it got done. You know, Charlie used to go as far as even to control the start of the race, so from the gantry. So Michael did a lot behind the scenes and it just got done. He didn't make a fuss about it. He didn't complain about it. It was just, he saw it as it was his job and he managed it and he took it on and did it. And unfortunately it did take the flashpoint of Abu Dhabi being the thing that brought all of this to the surface.
Yeah, look, and from what I hear, from what you're saying and from other people that I've spoken to within Motorsport Australia circles, and, you know, he's a workaholic, you know, and he's passionate about motorsport and he's just doing what needs to be done. And for that, I commend him for it. I think if that's, you only do that sort of stuff and you only work to that sort of level if you've got the passion and the core of motorsport in your heart, right? If you saw it as a day-to-day job, you probably wouldn't go to that extreme, right? I say this because I would probably be doing the same thing, right? Because, you know, that would be me. I would do that. The other flip side I see...
Taking me away from my family for the next 3 months too. And before that for 3 years.
Yeah. 100%.
So, yeah, we do it because we love it, and it's in our heart, and our blood bleeds black and white checkered flags.
Yeah, 100%. You more so even as well. I mean, you've spent more time away than what you have in your own house in the last two or three years, let's face it. So, and there's, you know, and you've got to be, I suppose... You're very fortunate in the fact that you've got a wife that actually supports you and lets you live your dream as well. There's others in the background that may not be so lucky.
Exactly.
On the flip side to that, I'm still not comfortable with how that whole, irrespective of who won the championship, right? I would be saying exactly the same thing if Max had ended up, well, Max did win, but if Lewis had ended up winning the title and Max was the same thing. The way that whole event unfolded from lap one all the way through to obviously the final is always uneasy for me. Because I think there were plenty of precedents in the past with other races. Championship, you've got to just... my opinion is that you've got to adjudicate the race as a race. Forget the fact that it's a championship final. Forget the fact that... You know, you got a massive global audience. Forget the fact that it is what it is, because in the past they've done things like race stoppages. In the past that they've done, you know, there's other things that they could have done which didn't lead to that. Now, did Red Bull do anything wrong tactically? No. Mercedes would have done the same thing if the roles were reversed, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, at the end of the day, the way that the race was adjudicated as a race, right, was poor. Simple as that, right? They've used him as a scapegoat. They've used him as an example and that sort of stuff. I think that, you know, irrespective of who would have won the championship, we would be having the same discussion. You know, I think Michael Massey as a whole has done more good than what he's done bad. Has there been inconsistencies with his adjudication in the past, irrespective of last season? You could argue yes. But at the same token, if there are those inconsistencies there, Liberty, the owners of Formula One, the FIA, should have recognised this and should have been more proactivity and more forward thinking and would have put steps in place to prevent this from happening. But, well, even over the course of the year last year, because it was brewing, we called it right from race one what was likely going to happen, and sure enough it did, right, on multiple occasions. So I think it's unfortunate. I think the FIA need to keep him in the sport. Clearly he's got a lot to offer. And I hope that he does remain, whether it's back in Australia, whether it's still international. I mean, have you heard anything outside of, you know, what he's doing or what have you?
He's definitely still in the FIA at the moment.
Yeah.
He's definitely still working for the FIA as we speak. Like I said, it could well, and all for all intents and purposes, it could be him that still comes next Saturday or Sunday, my time, to inspect the venue and see the progress on the track. Excuse me, but which would be very handy for us because he's familiar, but he may bring one of the other race directors with him because he's been out many times before. So, look, I'm sure that they recognise his capabilities and just how good he actually is, and they'll keep him around. And like they've said in the media, if it's not in F1, if it's not in the FIA, then Motorsport Australia will have him back with a heartbeat. So he's going to be looked after.
Well, 100%. I could see him taking over. If he comes back domestically, he'd have to take over the role of Tim Schenken, surely, you know, and run via supercars. You would
imagine he'd be a shoo-in for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. New cars. I haven't seen a collective field of the most beautiful Formula One cars ever. I think I can't find one that's really bad, to be honest with you, and there's some that are better than others, but the bar has been set so high, both in terms of how they look and how they've been presented.
They're all so different as well. Like, there's not one that looks the same as the others. And well, besides having four wheels and a front wing and a rear wing, but they all look different, significantly different. There's massive, massive differences to the floors, to the side pod design, to the engine cover designs, to the way they're channeling the air down to the ground. It's amazing.
Yeah. Look, the regulations have really tested the aerodynamicists, I think. Some of the architecture in terms of how the side pods in particular, but also you can just see how the bodywork has been designed to channel the airflow down has been incredible. But, oh, look, I'm in love with the F175 Ferrari, and it's irrespective of the fact that we're on an Italian station. I think it's probably the best looking Ferrari. I would probably go as far as saying for at least the last 10 years. It's absolutely superb, and I'm so glad that they've gone back to their traditional darker red instead of the Marlboro red or that matte red. I mean, it's still a matte finish, but they've ticked the boxes this time. If it goes as good as it looks, I think we're going to be, from a Ferrari supporter's perspective, I think we're going to be in for a cracking year.
And, I mean, you know, the first week of testing sort of puts that instead, that they are probably one of the, you know, there's probably four teams that have done some good laps, and they're one of them. I think it's pretty hard to tear apart them from being at the top at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of testing, we just over the last 24 hours concluded the first three-day test held at Barcelona. And which saw Ferrari, McLaren and Mercedes take top spot and dominate times over the course of that particular period. So the pre-season test ended up being the top 10 as follows on the final day. Hamilton followed by George Russell. Then you had Perez, Verstappen, Vettel, which was good to see, not that far off the Mercedes pace. Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz, Alex Albon, Nicholas Latifi and Daniel Ricciardo in the top 10. But over the course of those first 2 days, you had the likes of Ferrari and McLaren sharing the top two spots on the grid, which was encouraging to see. Now, you know, granted that pre-season testing doesn't always give you the greatest amount of accuracy, if that's going to be a precursor for the season, then it's highly encouraging.
Yeah, it's definitely like to be all taken with a grain of salt at the moment. I've also read today that Alpine have come out and said they were using super, super heavy fuel loads and not even using the DRS down the straights. So they've probably got a second that you could take away from their best lap time before it set itself on fire today. But no, if it wasn't an official test, it was more of just a pre-season test. So it's really going to kick off next week when they get to Bahrain to start that first pre-season test there. And we'll get a bit of an idea of where the actual pecking order sits. But yeah, like you said, good to see Ferrari and McLaren up there. We kind of expected. We did talk a little bit last year about how they would come out swinging this year. And I think Red Bull and Mercedes are still one and two. They're just hiding a little bit at the moment still.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think they also, there was a question from the media asking the drivers about how close they could actually sit behind one another on the track. And there was some video footage that came out where the cars were almost nose to tail going down the front straight at Barcelona. And general feedback was that the drivers can definitely tell that they can sit closer to one another without any disruptions, which is actually going to produce greater opportunities for closer racing and overtaking, which I think, hallelujah. Yeah,
hopefully. I read a report from Charles that from 3 seconds down to 1 second, it's pretty good, and they can run a lot closer and not have so much thermal degradation as they did with last season's car, which is the heat coming from the front tire from the disturbed air.
Yep.
But then from 1 second down to 0.5 of a second, it starts to feel a little bit like last year's car. And then once they're right up underneath the wing, under half a second, the air comes back to normal again, which is good, because, I mean, that's half a second to 1 second gap is where we can have DRS come into play still, which will help keep that happening. But it's the closeness through the corners that's going to help them.
Yeah, 100%.
If you're right up behind someone and you'll be able to pass again, you know, and attack, stay in their slipstream and attack. But yeah, a little bit less drag on the cars this year as well, because obviously not so aero-dependent from the wings. So they've been able to trim them out a little bit, but that'll make it a little bit less slipstream-dependent. But I think it's going to be an awesome season of racing and plenty of cars up there fighting for it.
Yeah, 100%. Now, one of the key takeaways from the testing was porpoising. And you'd be like, what on earth is people talking about with porpoising? So every team down the grid complained about this phenomenon. And so what is porpoising? Well, the leading edge of the floor, or the front wing, is actually pushed even closer to the ground as the downforce is acting on it as it increases. So the closer to the ground it gets, the more powerful the ground effect is, as air is actually rushing ever faster through the shrinking gap of the front end. So what does this do? What it does is it increases the pressure differences between the underside and the upper surfaces. And what that does is actually increasing the downforce yet even further until it actually stalls. So at that point, much of the load is suddenly released, and then the front end of the car actually rises, and then in response, that allows the ground effect to actually start again. So what it's doing is it's bucking up and down like this down the front straight. Some cars are worse than others. Now, this apparently is nothing new to the teams, just hadn't happened for 40 years. So none of the simulation work or the wind tunnels or anything of that nature could and didn't replicate that porpoising effect, because the belts that they actually have on the wind tunnels that's meant to simulate the road have still got more give than what the bitumen does.
Asphalt does.
Yeah. So what has also contributed to this is the stiffer suspension settings that they've got this year, and also the bigger, larger tyres and stiffer tyres as well. So what the teams are going to be doing now moving forward is that they're actually going to go back, going to go back to the future, going to go back to the 70s, where they've actually been faced this issue, and they've actually now got to start to alter the underside of the car, or they've got to work on suspension adjustments. So the problem would have been resolved had they had that flexibility in the suspension settings like they did last year. What it does mean now is that the teams are now going to become even more creative. And a lot of the reasons why a lot of these teams are running those rakes and aerodynamic wind tunnel testers, or, you know, the gratings, you could say, all over the cars over the course of the weekend. So I would suspect that the next test, which I believe is in the Middle East, is that right?
Yeah, it's at Bahrain. I think it's someone's going to shoot me if I'm wrong, but it should be next week, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. In the next week or so, they will. I'll probably suggest you'll see a significant difference in terms of car behaviour as well. So
lots and lots and lots of updates.
Yes, 100%. I think by the time we see the cars come round one, but then by the time they even hit the ground in Australia, they're going to be significantly different. No doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your takeaway, best looking car?
Probably the Ferrari or the McLaren.
Yeah, I like the glow in the dark fluoro orange. That's pretty cool. The Mercedes looks very smart too, in particular side profile on it. That's very, very
nice. Yeah, and silver, it looks really, really cool. I also like the new way the DRS opens on the wing, how it doesn't sort of, it makes it look more like a mailbox. There's a bit of a thicker wing end plate on it. I like that on the cars too. It looks good.
Yeah, the Aston Martin looks very, very sharp too. That looks probably the most aerodynamic went from a side profile. It's very sleek, very low profile out of the lot of them as well, from what I've seen. It almost looks like it's like this massive, you know, you get the cartoons, how you got like a little fireball and it just traces off into like a little, kind of reminds me of that. But if it goes as good as it looks, they're going to be in for a bit of a shout as well. So we are off to a break, and then when we come back, we will talk supercars.
Radio Italia Uno.
You're listening to Negative Camber with Jamie and Lee on Radio Italia Uno 87.6 FM.
Welcome back to Negative Camber, the motorsport show, proudly supporting Scuderia Ferrari Club Adelaide from the studios of Radio Italia Uno 87.6 FM. Hope you're enjoying the first show back of the new season. It's got a bit of a pre-season-y type of feel to it. For those that have just tuned in, my partner in crime, Mr. Lee Harrison, is live in Miami. We, in the budget that we didn't know he had, we shipped him offshore to work live at that on the ground at the Miami Formula One Grand Prix. So, mate, we're not keeping you up too late over there.
No, not too late. Look, doing it for the good of the show, and luckily it's Sunday for me tomorrow, so I can sleep really, really late and spend most of the day in bed. I've just got to run to the supermarket, and that's about it, really. So nice, chill day, and I might get out and try and find a beach somewhere to lay on in this nice North Miami sun.
Mate, we were talking off air very briefly, just for our listeners at home. The normal question that you get asked in America is, have you tried Starbucks coffee yet? But give us a feel of what you're eating, what you're chowing down, and some of the food that you're getting at the stadium and stuff as well. I am jealous.
Right now I'm eating a really, really healthy dinner. I've got a bag of no GMO, no gluten-free vegan bean chips, I think they are. But that's my dinner for tonight. Crisps, as they call them over here, sort of like a Dorito. They're pretty cool. But in general, food's been excellent. Starbucks coffee in the room here comes in like a little tea bag thing that you set in a coffee machine, and it sort of percolates itself down and into a cup. It's actually not too bad and gets me going in the middle of the morning. And then We've got access to some nice facilities at the stadium. The Formula One offices are in the Hard Rock Stadium there with the Dolphins. So we have a cafeteria style lunch, and it's something different every day. So as I was saying to you earlier, we had Philly cheesesteaks one day this week. We had build your own tacos another day, full salad bar and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, look, we're being looked after, which is really good. And the food here most times is beautiful. I went out to a lovely restaurant here in Fort Lauderdale called Shooters. I think that was Wednesday. Had an awesome steak, one of the best steaks I've ever eaten in my life. It was delicious and perfectly cooked. But yeah, other than that, you know, your takeaways, there's 100 million different types of takeaways, Chili's, your Burger King's, your KFC's, your McDonald's are on every second corner, just like back home. But yeah, can't wait to get out a bit more and explore some more food opportunities.
Sounds good, mate. I'm very, very jealous of this. Mate, if you don't come back primed for heavy four-stroke class with all the wonderful food that you're eating over there, then I will seriously start to question your dietary intake.
See, this is a double-edged sword, you see, because I do so much walking at work. Like I do today, I only did a half a day at work and I did 6Ks of walking. So a general day is sort of 10 to 12Ks of walking. So at the minute, I feel like I can eat what I want and I'm just going to work it off the next day. Just throw in a quick gym session in the morning and I'll come back better shape than when I left, mate.
All right, enough of you.
you can mute me anytime you want, mate.
Nah,
but no, right. I reckon I'll bring a bag of these chips home for you, mate.
Please do.
These chips are absolutely on fire. I bought them at the supermarket on Sunday when I first got here, and they've been sitting in my cupboard, and I thought, I need something to eat. I've cracked them, and now I'm really disappointed that I've had them sitting here for so long.
Oh, God. Well, you can start to buy a whole pack of them. Yeah, bring them down. Any merch and stuff that you want to give to your bestest buddy, by all means. I'm not talking about Nick. Yeah. I'm talking about me. So, like, mate, I'll be more than welcome to get some memorabilia.
Yeah, nice.
Anyway, back to the serious stuff. V8 Supercars are on next weekend for the start of the new season. With the Borough Pairs Sydney Super Night. Yes, we are back at SMP again. Kind of feels like we never left the place, to be honest with you. I'll run through the calendar. We've got the 26th and 27th of March. We've got the Ned Whiskey Tasmania Super Sprint. And then we've got the Formula One Grand Prix. On the 30th of April, the cars and the teams are back in Perth for the Bunnings Trade Super Night. On the 22nd of May, it's the Winton Super Sprint. Then you've got the Merlin Darwin Triple Crown in 18th and 19th of June. The NTI Townsville 500 in the middle of July. Then we're at the cars are at the Bend for the OTR Super Sprint at the end of July, which we will be there on the ground, I believe. I've Charlie Bullis, who's the PR for V8 Supercars, is also a bit of a follower of the show, and I've been speaking to her in the background, and we've arranged to do a bit of a catch-up when we're over there in July, which will be cool. Penrite All Sandown Super Sprint will be on the 19th and 21st of August. Then you've got the Auckland Super Sprint on the 10th and 11th of September. The big one, the Repco Bathurst 1000 on the 6th to the 9th of October, and the Boost Mobile Gold Coast 500 on the 28th and the 30th of October. The Repco Newcastle 500 is a TBC date. However, it was announced the other week at the Let's Revive the Adelaide 500 meet and greet at Civic Park that if Labor get the election, there's every chance that the Adelaide 500 will be the season finale of this year, and I cannot wait for that to actually eventuate.
Yeah, fingers crossed, eh? So if everyone's out there wants motorsport back in the parklands, you know who to vote for.
Oh, look, yeah, a little bit of propaganda, but you know what? Who cares? I think
are a motorsport-based show. We've got the best interests of motorsports at heart.
Exactly right. I mean, what better to do like a negative camber on the grounds in the V8 Supercars pit lane at the Adelaide 500, and we've got Todd Hazelwood there to our left or in the middle, maybe a few other big names in and amongst the grid. Maybe the great man. The great man might be on the desk. Maybe we might have Crompton, Larko and the great man. Could you imagine?
That would be a pipe dream, but we can push for it. We'll try and get ourselves some press passes and get in there and look official.
We'll walk in there with your FIA suit and shirt, mate, and looking yourself all official, and they'll probably think you're like, the big wig.
God.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. With those long locks of yours. Yes, supercars, more or less the same. It's going to be the last season of the current generation of supercar, which will be finally the last season that you'll see Holden in motorsport full stop, outside of, say, you know, Touring Car Masters and all that sort of stuff. So we've finally come to the end of that particular era. Yeah, very interesting to see what is going to play out, whether it's going to be more or less the same between Red Bull and DJR, or whether there are actually going to be some other players in, that come into it from, you know, the likes of Tickford. And I think my smoky this year is actually going to be MSR. I think Todd and Jack LeBrock are going to be in with a... they'll be smokies this year. I think they'll surprise more than what we think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think initially it's going to be much the same. You can't go past Red Bull 888 and Shell Team Penske. Well, DJR, Team Penske's gone now, but... look, I think the big change is going to come when Gen 3 comes. Tickford will be there. Walkinshaw and Andretti United will be there with Percat and with Chazzy.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of strong lineups on the grid, and I think it's going to be a close fought battle come towards the middle and the end of the season. I think initially, though, Red Bull and Shell are going to be too good.
Yeah, look, I tend to agree. I think we overlooked Walkinshaw with Nick Percat rejoining the fold and also Chaz Mostert. I mean, if they can replicate their Bathurst speed at SMP, even though, ironically enough, they struggled at SMP last year across the five races that they held there towards the end of the year, they'll certainly be... If they can replicate their Bathurst speed, you could almost argue they'll be the team to beat.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, and Nick, I think, at that point in time now where he's done his dues, he's done his apprenticeship, he joins Walkinshaw with the eyes on winning a championship or a Bathurst, or if not both. And I think if ever there's going to be the time for him to actually start to have a name engraved on one of those two trophies, or for Bathurst he's done it before, but for the championship in particular, now's the time.
Yep, 100%.
Premier Racing have come on board. So Premier of, well, what used to be the old kerfuffle, which was Team Sydney. Yeah. The Zabaris family, which are pretty much synonymous with drag racing, had bought what was left of Team Sydney. And they've actually released two cars with which have pretty much been refreshed and up to spec 888 Commodores. And that's got Chris Pither and the return of Gary Jacobson in the mix. So in Subway colours as well as Coca-Cola Racing as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out now too, because look, unfortunately, in my opinion, Techno Team Sydney were on a massive downward trajectory over the last two or three years. You've heard all sorts of stories and reports about the fact that they weren't updating machinery, they were running old equipment, etc., etc., and money does play a big part in that. And these guys seem to be, you know, the Zabaris family, anyone that you speak to in the drag racing circles and the drag racing scene, these guys put on a pretty good gig. So I'd be very keen to see how they pan out over the course of this year in the build-up to Gen 3 next year as well.
Yeah, I won't expect too much for them. I think their focus will be heavily set on making next year's car work for Gen 3. But good to see that Chris Pither gets another lifeline in supercars as well. And I think it's good just to have them have Zibaris involved in the four-wheeled action. Like you said, he's synonymous with drag car racing, and it takes a serious amount of money and serious amount of passion to go drag car racing. So if he puts that much into the supercars, then they're on for a good thing.
100%. As you go scroll through the grid, over the course of what's happened in the off-season, I mean, Lee Holdsworth's back in the fold with a full-time gig. His drive in Bathurst was absolutely superb, and the fact that he's now gotten back into Grove Racing speaks volumes of the quality of drive. But also, they've actually now had an amalgamation with Walkinshaw Racing to do some engine development, ironically enough. Yep. So next year, for those that don't know, there's only going to be two suppliers of engines for Gen 3. That will be Herod, which will be which took over Mostek Engines, which were primarily focused on DJR. They've now expanded and will now start to do a majority of the four teams for Gen 3. Tickford Racing will cease as an engine manufacturer at the end of this year. And Walkinshaw as well. So Walkinshaw have now decided to expand their engine development services and help other teams in the grid to aid in power plants. So that first relationship will start with Grove. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do on those XSBR power plants, which are Ford-based. And then obviously they'll be working on their own as well as providing engines for the rest of the grid. And Herod Racing have now also moved into Blanchard Racing. Pardon me. So Blanchard Racing ran an all Tickford setup last year, and they've now gone to Tickford chassis with a Herod power plant in it too. So some reports are that Slady might be a bit of a dark horse this year. He might actually challenge the, Tickford in terms of highest placed Tickford-based driver, if you want to call it that, even though Blanchard are their own entity. So they showed some promise last year. I think this year we'll see whether last year was a flash in the pan or whether they're actually going to improve further.
Yeah, and I think another smoky that we haven't mentioned could be Erebus. They showed some good season form the whole way through last year with two rookie drivers, and they've kept the team mostly the same. So one of the few on the grid where they've not had too many changes. So they could enter this season quite strong, and Brody and Will are absolutely not slouches at all, and they're both going to be hungry for more wins. So I think with Barry Ryan at the helm and Betty doing what she does best, that's a recipe for success as well to push into this year, and especially looking forward to next year as well.
Yeah, 100%. They've got a serious budget behind them again now, since now that Atherton and Boost Mobile have thrown their weight behind it. I think it'll be very interesting. I would expect them to be very, very competitive this year. They've got the money now and the backing to do it. And I think Brody and Will Brown will be podium contenders for Sydney for sure. It's just a case of whether they can maintain it over the course of the season consistently. I mean, SVG would be almost your lay-down Mazir, and I think Anton Di Pasquale would be right up there for Sydney. I'm also rooting for Todd. I think he's going to have a cracking year.
Absolutely. I'm hoping Todd and the MSR team can have a good, strong year and hopefully forge some momentum going into next year as well.
Yeah. Todd's obviously a big fan of the show. He'll come on later on this year as well. And I think the aim will get a few of the drivers up on the grid if we can and add them into the show as well, which would be really cool. You never know, mate. We might do a negative Canberra trek to Bathurst, considering you've never actually been there before.
Yeah, that would be good. I'll be back by then, so hopefully, and we can do a Bathurst trek. That would be awesome, and do some recordings for the show from there, or set up a studio in the back of a Winnebago or something on the infield.
Yeah, I'm sure the wives would love to be husbands free for a week or so while we sort of flaunt ourselves around New South Wales.
They can come. We'll just drop them off in Sydney or something on the way through, and then shoot out to Bathurst. They'll be right.
Yeah. Birds of a feather will flock together. Yeah, but
exactly.
Speaking of flocking, we'll go off to our break, and then we'll come back and we'll find out what grinds your gears.
Radio Italia Uno.
You're listening to Negative Canberra with Jamie and Lee on Radio Italia Uno 87.6 FM.
Welcome back to Negative Canberra, the motorsport show, proudly supporting Scuderia Ferrari Club Adelaide, live from the studios of Radio Italia Uno 87.6 FM. And we're on the final stages of the show, and before too long, we welcome the return of one of our favourite segments, What Grinds Your Gears.
Now it's time for Grind My Gears with Jamie and Lee.
So, my friend, from the shores of Miami, your beachside resort, what grinds your gears?
Yeah, look, I've become accustomed to not having being able to attend every single Karting Australia, Australian Kart Championship round recently, but being able to just jump on the Facebook page or on mysportlive.tv to watch it. And just tried to do that today so I could keep up with the action before coming on for tonight's podcast, and I'm seeing that it's gone subscription based, so I've got to sign up to a subscription. Like, I'm just ropeable. I'm absolutely ropeable. We pay so much in fees and licenses and entries and club memberships and the rest of it that goes to Karting Australia. I just don't know why they had to change it and they couldn't make it a free stream, or at least to the Facebook page. I'm not going to spend $50 a year to watch go-kart racing on TV. That's just not what's going to happen. So, it is what it is, I suppose. And there's not much that my single little voice is going to do about it, but, that's grinding my gears today. I was most upset.
I tend to agree. I think, you know, it's, look, it's the top tier of karting in the country. We know that. But it's also a sport that relies heavily on having to spread the word. It's not like it's prime time. It's not like it's got a massive subscription base like Fox Sports, etc., where it's on that sort of level of platform. And the only way that you're ever going to grow the sport outside of passionate people like us spreading the word is by giving that access to people on social media or anything like that where they can actually see the quality of racing and the sort of go-karts live. Timing, yeah, that's great, but it doesn't tell the full story. And so if you're wanting to reach a broader audience, if you want to grow the sport, if you want to give kids aspirations outside of, you know, word of mouth or general club days, get it out there, you know, mass market the thing, you know, rather than being subscription-based. You know, the sport's expensive enough as it is, irrespective of what people say that they're trying to save money and cost cuts and all that sort of stuff too. There's better ways that you can do that. So, no, I agree. You know, we could be watching the racing right now and sort of almost commentating on it instead.
I mean, fair enough if it had been like that from the start, but just to come and throw it in now, like, I'm sure that Karting Australia pays MySport TV to come and do the streaming, so it seems like they're sort of making double the payout on that. So look, I'm just wish we could be watching it like you said and keeping abreast of all the action that's happening while we speak, but here's what it is.
The other thing that grinds my gears is data loggers, that old chestnut. So the four stroke category outside of Supermax is, to my knowledge, the only class at the moment in Karting Australia that's not allowed to have a data logger on race day. So you can use it for testing, you can use it for practice, but you can't use it on race day. Four Stroke Super, on the other hand, with a slightly more powerful motor, is allowed to run a data logger. And they can run it all the more. And now, at the end of the day, the biggest issue that surrounds there's twofold. Data loggers are helpful for driver coaching and driver training. Two, what driver doesn't want to see what lap time they're doing whilst they're racing if you're in that. I mean, if you're in the midst of the pack and you're in the battle, you won't pay attention to it, but it's always nice to have a little glance to have a look at it. Three, in particular with the emulsion tubes that have now been updated on the Torinis, there's now an ever-growing emphasis on head temperatures to make sure that they're working in their optimum temperature, especially if you run it richer or leaner as well. And four, the comeback to that is that Karting Australia state that the reason why that their four-stroke is an entry-level class, considered to be entry-level, and the use of having a data logger is designed to cut costs. What crap? Because it's a one-off expense, right? And a data logger, right, should last you a considerable amount of time unless you're one of those ones that wants to update to keep up with the Joneses, right? Now, irrespective of the fact that, you know, you've got Microns and you've got Alfanos and all that sort of stuff, you will spend more money in parts, you'll spend more money on tires, you'll spend more money on fuel, you'll spend more money on bits and pieces and accessories, right, repeatedly over the course of the season, depending if you're racing a lot more regularly, right, than what you would do with a one-off cost for a data logger.
Right? Absolutely.
Makes no sense to me. They need to move past the fact that they treat four strokes in particular, right, as a beginner's class. When you're racing for Karting Australia or under the Karting Australia, you're the next step up, right? You know what beginner's class is, or beginners for me, right? High kart racing or going punting around Port Gawler, right,
yeah,
on a punter, which has probably got a data logger anyway, all right? So,
yeah, well, more than likely.
Yeah, I think to myself, if you're going to allow running four strokes as a state championship, if you're going to be using it as a feeder category to the next big step, that's where your driver coaching starts. That's where your ability to interpret data starts. That's where you're learning how to get set up and what's faster and what's slower. Now, you can do that in testing, but you're also tuning the kart over the course of the day as well. Now, they could say, well, you could turn around and run my laps and all that sort of stuff, but I want to see throttle traces. I want to see data.
Then you need a subscription to that as well, and then that's, you know, that's all cost and all the rest of it. If they were really serious about cost cutting, tyre pull, do tyre pooling. So you're not allowed to run new sets of tyres every second race meeting. You have to race on one set of tyres in four stroke for the whole season, or for you know, the whole Festival State Cup. And if you want to run new tyres, you can do it for the bigger race meetings or whatever. But yeah, I agree. There's other ways definitely that you can cut the costs, rather than outlawing data loggers, which a lot of guys can still buy, even secondhand ones for yeah. $150, $100, you know, and it's not like it's an amazing expense.
Exactly right. I mean, when we built my go-kart, I had given away my Micron 4 with the hope of getting a Micron 5 or the new Alfano. But because of COVID and microchips and all that sort of stuff, there's been a shortage. You can't get them into the country. So I just put on my brother's old Alfano on there. He's got a Micron 4, and I'm using the old Alfano that we used when we were racing at Jepp's Cross. At Bolivar. Yep. So I think to myself, well, you know what? I saved myself $500, right, at least. But at the same token, right, I can now use that, you know, and it's there. It didn't cost me anything, right, and you can reuse it.
Yeah. Right? I think data loggers in general is a bit over the top. Like, you should be able to use a data logger, but maybe not the one that spending $1,500 on throttle tracing and brake pressure and steering and GPS and all that sort of stuff. Maybe that's probably a little bit over the top.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, for the lower level class, right, so that sort of stuff is KZ. You know, like top end, AKC, big money, big budget, like the show. But for grassroots stuff like four strokes, cadets, cadet 12s, all that sort of stuff, you know, just your basic data logger, your $500, $600 Micron or your Alfano or something like that is more than enough, right? But should be in all the classes, full stop.
Yeah.
Right. That's what grinds my gears. Karting Australia, make it happen. Do it now. Do whatever you have to do, right? Amend the book, whatever it's done. You have to get it done, right? Because it makes the officials' life a lot easier because they don't have to deal with the crap for drivers having the whinge in pit lane, right? But it puts everyone on an even keel, right? There's more than what, if they're worried about budget costs and cut costs and all that sort of stuff, there are more effective ways to do that, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Yeah. So anything else that grinds your gears?
Nothing else that's grinding my gears, no.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, I think that we're getting close to wrapping up the show. I think we're actually, funny enough, I want to introduce a new segment, Jamie's Jokes. So, Ron, please.
There we go.
Give me some music, please.
You've put him on the spot.
I have put him on the spot, but that's okay.
You've put yourself on the spot.
I've put myself on the spot too.
A joke. I thought you would have had this ready to go.
I'm waiting for my intro. Right. So, got that? Jamie's
joke. This better be a good joke.
All right. So, yesterday, I saw a guy spill all his Scrabble letters on the road. So, I come up to him and I say, "Look, sir, what's the word on the street?"
Appropriate sound effect inserted correctly. God.
You'll learn over the course of the year, folks, that I have a book, 101 Dad Jokes, and there's more that's going to be coming. So, mate, I'm going to make your life hell over Miami every fortnight anyway, at least until you're here.
I can feel that coming. I can feel that coming.
Anyway, I think that wraps it. Gives us a wrap.
Just before we go, I want to pay tribute in our show. I've just learned immediately of the passing of Irene Karavas, mother to John Karavas and Nick Karavas. So from all of us here at Negative Canberra to John, to Kim, to Nick, to Savannah, to Kayla, to the whole extended Karavas family, our sincere condolences go out to you at this time. And we're sending all our thoughts and love to you guys to help you through this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the Karavas family is synonymous with karting in South Australia. So when the matriarch goes down, you take your time and pay respects. And I know John and the family will be feeling that hard. So our thoughts are with you both and to all the family as well. I concur with that, mate. So yeah, it's a sad time, but may she be in a better place.
100%. Yeah. Tribute and respect to the Carabas family.
100%. Speaking of better place, mate, you enjoy the shores of Miami. I'm going to go back to living in suburban Adelaide and doing my daily deeds. But we will be back in a fortnight, folks, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in and keep an eye out on our Spotify channel for previous podcasts, as well as our Facebook page. And we will be very shortly commencing our own YouTube channel. So any of the web shows that we put up, you can actually see our ugly mugs online and probably make memes out of us too with some of our facial expressions and all that sort of stuff too, especially your sunglass your sunglass routine there at the beginning there, mate. So you get biscuits and all that sort of stuff onto it, mate. You're in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah, mate. No worries. Biscuits will be around it. He's loving one for a meme. So I'll keep it cracking for him.
But maybe we should start one called Bicky's BS.
Well, I mean, that's just everything that comes out of his mouth, to be honest. But anyway, we won't go there. We don't have time for that.
Yeah, exactly. Special thanks to the station and also for Ron at Podcast City here for making this this one possible. Good night, everyone. We will see you in a fortnight. Hope you enjoy the show.